Good morning. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Today's show, Life Rattle number 1375, brings different views of motherhood with two stories by new Life Rattle writer Allison Colvin. The same year the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, 1957, Allison Colvin was born on a sticky June day in Ottawa to a scientist father and a librarian mother, both of Scottish descent. The second of two daughters, she used to watch her father manage his Petri dishes at the National Research Council. Allison knew she would never pursue his profession because his lab smelled bad. At age 12, she spent 1 year with her family in Quebec City learning French and now dearly wishes that she had kept a diary. At university, she studied history and French and then librarianship. In Toronto, she worked as a law librarian while raising two boys with her lawyer husband. Allison Colvin enjoys politics, film, writing, singing opera choruses and Bach cantatas, and is working on her half wheel and yoga. Mother, the word invokes such intense emotions. And today, in North America at least, is the day we celebrate those who delivered us into the world. Rather than the saccharine Mother's Day sentiments that our lives have been saturated with these past few weeks, Allison Colvin's stories offer two distinct yet equally moving portraits of mothers of adult children. Allison vitalizes her prose with the revealing dialogue that she bestows on her characters, and her ability to capture the unexpected details that make a story ring true. Our first story introduces us to a middle-aged mother, her steadfast husband, and their two young adult daughters. Bombarded with news reports of a sexual assault scandal involving a respected celebrity and a growing list of young women, and tormented by flashes of rising body temperature, this mum tries to hold on to her cool while she struggles to keep up with the fluctuating landscapes of her daughters' lives. Let's listen now as Allison Colvin reads her story, Hot Flash.
Hot Flash by Allison Colvin. His face was on each daily newspaper stacked at the grocery store's service desk. The brilliant smile, and 2 days of dark facial growth. Rosalind stopped her cart to examine the headlines. Once her favorite radio interviewer, this smooth Gen Xer, whom Rosalind had listened to weekday mornings, had been sacked by his taxpayer-subsidized employer for allegedly slapping and choking young women behind closed doors. He described it on Facebook, said it was consensual. Consensual? Really? Rosalind didn't like to think about the darkness of some people's lives. These days, it seemed unpleasantness slithered everywhere, reinforced by social media. The middle-aged cashier at the counter noticed her interest in the headline. A real creep, she said, as she organized shiny lottery tickets under a plastic sheet. Never listened to that station. Hormonal heat rose under Rosalind's filmy neck scarf. She unwound the fabric and brushed aside her bangs. The clerk gave her a sympathetic, "I've been there, honey," look. While the hot flash passed, Rosalind studied the headline and wondered whether this story had reached her daughter in Europe. Probably not. Canadian news never went international unless it happened to be about their local cocaine-using mayor. More unpleasantness. His poor mother, Rosalind said. She's probably part of the problem. They always blame the mother. Rosalind pulled a grocery list from her jean pocket and aimed her shopping cart toward the meat section at the back of the store. The butcher was laying out packets of beef, his apron soiled with blood. She selected 3 marbled steaks. Alex loved steak, always had. Rosalind's purse vibrated. She scrambled for her phone. A text from Alex. Mom, no need to meet me at the airport. I've got a ride downtown. XXOO. That's disappointing. Rosalind enjoyed the airport's arrival terminal, watching families and friends be reunited. She thought of the infinite ways to interpret her daughter's few words. Had she met somebody on the trip, or maybe at Heathrow's flight gate? Was it a boy, or some older man? Alex was too trusting. Time to text Brian. "She'll be fine, don't worry," her husband typed back. His somewhat reassuring mantra while Alex had been traveling was, "No news is good news." Practical Brian. Rosalind was so lucky. What had she done to deserve this good man? The truth was that Rosalind was both looking forward to and dreading her daughter's arrival, remembering last summer's sleepless nights waiting for Alex to get home from her hostess job at an upscale pizza restaurant on King Street. At the end of August, when Alex left to travel for a few months, Rosalind had enjoyed a good night's sleep, or more precisely, an improved sleep, being still at the mercy of night sweats. Now, with Alex coming home, she would be listening to noises in the street and creaks in their downtown semi. Back when Alex was in high school, she could at least ground her. She suspected Brian secretly dreaded their daughter's return. It would cut into their growing post-kids-at-home intimacy. She remembered last weekend's romp and smiled. Alex's Air Canada flight from London was due at Pearson at 2 p.m., meaning Alex would, barring bad weather, border control luggage examinations, and multi-car pileups on the 401, be downtown by 4 at the latest. Rosalind started her daughter watch at 3:30. At 4:30, as Rosalind began to fret, a beige SUV drew up to the curb on the far side of the street. The driver stayed in the van. It looked like a woman. Alex heaved her knapsack and suitcase out of the back and waved. The vehicle sped off. "Welcome home, darling," Rosalind said, giving her daughter a hug. Alex's long hair smelled like Aussie shampoo with a hint of cigarette. Rosalind could see she was well, all that mattered. "What kind person brought you home?" "A retired teacher, like you. I sat beside her on the plane." "A teacher? Well, that explains it," Rosalind said. "Better take those bags downstairs to the laundry room." Alex kicked off her Keds and sniffed. "Smells good." "Steak for dinner. Your sister's coming." Alex hugged Rosalind from behind. "Really sorry, Mom. Won't be home. Promise Rebecca. You remember Rebecca. It's her birthday. She's leaving tomorrow. And I'm a vegan now." And so it begins, thought Rosalind. Last summer, it had been sugar. When did that happen? She didn't hear the muffled answer as Alex was already halfway down the basement stairs, dragging her luggage behind her. At least Alex's older sister Sophie was settling down. She had fallen in love in grad school with a fellow student named Ian. He liked order. Sophie benefited from this. She'd been a messy kid, always losing things. Sophie and Ian now shared a cube-like condo at the waterfront and had plans to marry in a year. Rosalind liked the fellow. Brian reserved judgment. He always kept a distance from the young men the girls dated, but the engagement helped to mellow him. Lately, they hadn't seen much of Sophie and Ian, probably busy with all the wedding preparations and new jobs, but today Sophie had called from work to say they'd come for dinner. "Where's the kid?" Sophie asked when she arrived. "Just missed her. She had a prior dinner invitation." Rosalind wiped her hands on a dish towel, then turned the volume down on the radio she'd left on, waiting for news about the host. "That's too bad. I was looking forward to seeing her." Sophie pointed to the radio. "You listened to that guy, didn't you?" Sophie's voice sounded odd, a little too high. "Anything the matter?" Rosalind asked. "Where's Ian?" "Sends his apologies. With a fork, Sophie fished out a bit of onion from the frying pan. Rosalind swatted her daughter's hand gently. Sophie continued, "He's preparing some policy presentation for tomorrow. Hey, people at work are talking about that radio guy." Rosalind turned to her daughter. "And you? What do you think?" Sophie studied her mother's face. "I can tell you're in one of your high horses moods. Shall I set the table?" The next afternoon, Alex arrived home with several grocery bags and proceeded to pack the fridge full of strange products. Rosalind picked up one plastic container. When she peeled back the foil, she discovered it looked like butter. She silently read through the ingredients. Soy this, soy that. "Do I take it you'll be looking after your own meals?" "Sure. Not tonight, though. I'm out clubbing with Lily and Janie." Rosalind knew a little about clubbing, having recently watched 8 glossed and shimmering 20-somethings at a local restaurant. On the count of 3, they threw back 2 rounds of golden shooters before heading downtown. "Well, at least there's safety in numbers," Rosalind thought. And hadn't she gone on pub crawls at the same age? At 10, Alex and her friends set out in mini dresses, clutch bags with skinny shoulder straps and 6-inch heels, their long straight hair mirroring long legs. Rosalind and Brian followed them out onto the porch. The girls teetered down the sidewalk like novice runway models. "Make good choices," Rosalind shouted. Rosalind thought she heard Alex say to her friends, "I'm so embarrassed." Brian draped his arm over her shoulder. Halfway down the block, a man in a battered van yelled something at the girls out his window. Rosalind couldn't make out the words. She felt Brian's upper arm muscles stiffen on her shoulder. The young women ignored the driver and continued toward the subway. "Remind me, girls just want to have fun," Rosalind said. "Didn't you? She's 22, she's got her cell," Brian said, "and her mother's sense." He massaged Rosalind's neck, then fell silent. Rosalind knew he was worried too. She couldn't sleep. She had a theory that most mothers, no matter how old, slept with one ear open when under the same roof as their offspring. After Alex's birth, Rosalind's parents and her sister and brother-in-law had visited. In the middle of the night, Alex cried out. Rosalind tried unsuccessfully to disturb Brian's REM sleep by stabbing him in the side with her pointer finger. When he didn't wake, she rose from the warmth of her bed to find her older sister and mother outside Alex's room. Rosalind's father's snores echoed in the narrow passage. It was irrational lying awake. Her daughter had been camping in Turkey, for goodness sakes. But tonight, Rosalind still waited for the sound of the key in the front door, the shuffle of shoes on the rack in the hallway, and her daughter's footsteps past their bedroom to the 3rd-floor staircase. When it finally happened, the chunky red numbers on the digital clock showed 3 a.m. Thank God she's not dead in a back alley off Richmond Street, the victim of ecstasy overdose. Beside her, Brian lay on his back snoring, one arm flung off his side of the bed. She nudged him. He rolled over. The snoring stopped. Nothing woke him. She hoped the girls would find someone like their father. Upstairs, the toilet flushed, the light that spilled into the stairwell turned off. Rosalind's tongue tingled. Heat spread through her face and limbs, followed by the transitory feeling of needing to pee. Rosalind pushed off the duvet, rolled away from Brian's body heat, then turned her pillow to the cool side. The morning paper had more radio host news. An actress had come forward saying he'd choked her. It sounded true. Rosalind washed out the French press. God help that woman, she thought. As suds rose in the sink, she asked her BlackBerry engrossed Brian, "Are there really people who think choking is consensual?" "It's a little early in the day for that kind of discussion," He pointed to his BlackBerry. I've got to take this. She sometimes thought men would rather have root canal than discuss these issues. Sophie shuffled in the kitchen in slippers and sweat gear. A little early for what? She asked. What are you doing here? Rosalind asked. Anything wrong? Needed some space, that's all. It was Sophie that Rosalind had heard come in last night. Was Alex home? What's going on? Sophie turned to the kitchen doorway. Well, look who's here. It was Alex, still in clubbing clothes, her high heels in hand. Rosalind's daughters hugged for a long time. Sophie usually wasn't the huggy type. Rosalind tried to calm her voice. Did you have a nice time last night, Alex? Alex pulled her hair back into a ponytail. Really good, she said. Met this guy. We spent the whole time talking. Can you believe it? She pulled her iPhone from her clutch purse and walked out of the kitchen. Rosalind was trying hard to believe it. Sophie put on her jacket and said, gotta go. Don't you want breakfast? Rosalind asked, following her out onto the porch. What she really wanted to ask was, what the hell is going on? Not hungry. A drop of sweat trickled down the back of Rosalind's neck. She felt her world spinning off course. Alex spent the day texting or smiling at her iPhone. Rosalind had to work hard to keep from snatching it and throwing it over the fence into the next garden. Each time she phoned Sophie, it went to voicemail. In the early evening, Sophie texted to say, "Stop phoning me. Everything's fine." Alex appeared downstairs with Cleopatra eyes. "Bye, guys," she said as she walked out of the house. "Don't wait up." Through the living room window, Rosalind watched her daughter curl into an Austin Mini. The car sped off. She kicked herself for not getting the license plate number. Her lovely, talented daughter was out with a lout who wouldn't even come to the door and meet the parents. Another sleepless night. She woke to the smells of bacon and coffee. Brian must have got up early. She showered. When she got to the kitchen, Alex was stirring pancake batter while Brian read the paper. The radio was on. "You know that's not part of a vegan diet," Rosalind said, looking into the frying pan. "I've invited someone over." Alex's phone buzzed. "He's here." She walked to the front door. In a few moments, she reappeared. "Mom? Dad, this is Ravi." The clean-shaven young man extended a jar in Rosalind's direction. "Some raspberry jam. My dad made it," he said. "Sweetened with maple sugar. Nice manners. Did you hear that, Brian? His dad made it." She turned to her daughter's friend. "We have some delicious vegan bacon." "Mom, it's okay. He's not vegan." "Hey, did you hear the police charged that radio host?" Did they really have the evidence? Rosalind wondered. Ravi stayed the day. He helped dry dishes and offered to rake leaves. That night, Alex and Ravi left for a local documentary film festival, something about sustainable food in Toronto. For dinner, Brian brought home butter chicken and a bottle of Castel Giardondo. Over dinner, Rosalind sipped the mellow wine. "Seems like a nice boy," she said. "Serious about the environment, I like that," Brian said. "Perhaps we can relax a bit. Speaking of that, I got you these." He handed her two neon orange earplugs. "Worth a try. By the way, have you heard from Sophie?" "No news is good news, right?" she said. She curled up against Brian on their love seat. Brian stroked her hair. Rosalind selected a romantic comedy from Netflix. This was nice. Dinner, wine, movie. Quiet. In a moment, she knew Brian would doze off. 15 minutes into the film, the landline rang. "Probably someone wanting money," he murmured, waking up. "Maybe." Then her cell vibrated. "It's Sophie." Brian turned down the volume on the television. "Hi, sweetheart." Rosalind stood up from the love seat and put a finger over her other ear. "We can be there in a few minutes." She caught Brian's attention and put her hand over the phone's receiver. "She's crying." Heat was settling in. Drips of sweat were forming on her brow. "I've got the car keys," Brian said. "Let's go."
That was Allison Colvin reading her story, Hot Flash. Today's second story brings us into the mind of a sharp-witted senior who has not quite settled into her residence in a nursing home. When her daughter visits, we learn that Mum's failing memory, irksome and challenging as it may be, is perhaps a blessing. Let's listen now as Allison Colvin reads her story, The Party.
The Party by Allison Colvin. The house smelled of cooked ham and cloves. Elizabeth ran to greet the first party guest, one of her high heels almost catching on the Persian carpet in the hall. Through the front door's beveled glass, she saw Dorothy. Dearest Dorothy, wearing that three-strand pearl choker Elizabeth coveted. "Roger, Dorothy's here," she shouted over her shoulder. She yanked the door open, causing the Christmas wreath to jump on its hook. "I'm so glad you're first." She pulled her best friend into the foyer. "I've got something wonderful to tell you," she whispered. "I'm pregnant." "Keep your arm down, dear. You were daydreaming, weren't you?" A warm hand encircles Elizabeth's wrist. She tries to shake loose the grip. "None of that," the woman says. "Just one more bite of potato." Her voice has that funny sound. "What is the word?" Yes, she remembers. Lisp. "Use your spoon, dear." Elizabeth lifts a spoon heaped with mashed potato and gravy into her vision. What sort of party is this? Dreadful food. The woman with the lisp has a thick stomach covered in pink fabric, color of cotton candy. Elizabeth guides the spoon to her mouth. Too much salt. She closes her eyes and chews the mush. Where is Roger? Just like him to disappear at the busy times. We have some nice carrot cake today. Your daughter told me it's your favorite. Elizabeth presses her lips together. I don't think she wants dessert. A man's voice, not Roger's. Yes, quite right, no dessert. Any damn fool can be miserable. Isn't that what he used to say? What's that, Elizabeth? I didn't hear you. A moist cloth swipes across her mouth. Elizabeth pulls her head back from the wetness and opens her eyes. Thin silver and gold paper spirals coil down from the ceiling tiles. A celebration. In a moment, Elizabeth glides through the peach-colored room, past square tables of old people wearing easy-fit pants. Such a large party, mostly women. What is that odor? Like cooked onions and cleaning liquid all mixed up. Someone should do something. A woman with white hair stretches out a thin arm. Blue veins bulge at the wrists. "Hello, hello," she says and waves her hand, like she's washing a window. "Hello, hello." Poor dear, she's wasting away. "It's a pleasure to meet you." The woman disappears. Straight ahead, a large plant with pointy red flowers rests on the floor. Christmas. So lovely. What is that flower's name? Concentrate. Don't be stupid. You know it. She stretches out her hand to touch a petal. "Isn't it a beautiful poinsettia?" the lispy one says. "Poinsettia, yes, of course. Keep your feet up, Elizabeth, or I can't push properly." "Have you been introduced to my husband?" Elizabeth asks. "Don't believe so." A poster of Santa Claus holding a soft drink bottle is on the wall beside metal sliding doors. Elizabeth remembers the thick black buttons. She's seen guests push them. An elegant woman in black, wearing pearls, appears in the doors. A new guest. Perhaps Roger is upstairs taking a phone call. It's a pleasure to meet you, Elizabeth says. She touches her chest. Lovely. Oh, you mean these, the woman says and fingers her pearls. Thank you. My friend Dorothy has some, Elizabeth says. The woman is gone. The doors are open. Maybe I can find Roger. Elizabeth feels her feet touch the floor and tries to move through the doors. No, dear, the lispy one says. That's not the way. Elizabeth glides past open bedroom doors. On each are photographs of old people. One has writing. John likes folk music and hockey. She rolls on. Here we are, the lisp says. Elizabeth stops inside a bedroom. A large stuffed animal on a chair stares at her. Time for your nap. I'm just going to check if you need changing. Elizabeth feels a hand on her behind. How rude. She tries to pull away from the touch. I know you don't like it, but it needs to be done. The hand withdraws. Things seem pretty dry. Thank you for having me. It was a lovely party, Elizabeth says. I'd like to go home now. The woman kneels at Elizabeth's feet and smiles up at her. Let's get this belt unclipped. Elizabeth examines the woman's perfect teeth. All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. My two front teeth. My two front teeth, Elizabeth sings. That's a nice old tune. You might enjoy our Wednesday sing-alongs. The woman's hands are under Elizabeth's armpits. Now, on the count of three, we'll try to stand up. Elizabeth is up. Wobbly. Everything seems an effort. In a moment, she is sitting on the bed. Good work. Maybe after your nap, you'd like to play bingo. Bingo? What did this woman take her for? She lies down and feels the warmth of the comforter descend. She fingers its edges. There's a smell, she says. Could you open the window? The windows don't open, dear. Good nap, Mum? Elizabeth's daughter Rebecca is leaning over her, holding her hand. I thought I heard you say Dorothy. I'm surprised you even think of her. Lovely choker, Elizabeth says. What was that, Mum? I'm ready to leave the party. You've just woken up. Rebecca kneels by her side. This is your new home. You look tired, dear, Elizabeth says. I'll take you for a walk. The fresh air will do us both good. Do you smell it too? Elizabeth asks. Rebecca pulls the covers back. Let's get up. Help me get your coat on. That's it. Easy does it. Elizabeth drops into the wheelchair seat. Using her feet, she rolls toward the door. Good for you, Mum. I didn't know you could move the wheelchair yourself. But you should put your feet on the footpads now so I can push. There's the poinsettia again. Her daughter pushes one of the black buttons. The steel doors slide open. She rolls into the small compartment and waits. This is us, Rebecca says. Glass doors slide open. She is outside. Cold. Bright. Clean. Feel the sun, her daughter says. It's the solstice. Are we going home? What do you think of those shiny red balls on the tree across the street? Maybe I should decorate the birch tree. You know, the one in the front yard. It's a nice idea, Rebecca says. What say you? Take me home. Mum, you can't live alone anymore, remember? This is your new home. What? You were sick in the hospital. The doctor said you couldn't go home. I'm fit as a fiddle. Where is Roger? He should be here with the car by now. He died a long time ago. She thought hard. She had that lovely choker, remember? Who? Dorothy. She's dead, Mum. You must try to remember. Dad left you for her. You found them together at the party, remember? That's what you always told me. Elizabeth touches her throat. No need to shout. Rebecca kneels down beside Elizabeth. Her voice softens. I'll pick you up at Christmas. We'll spend the day together. Elizabeth smooths her daughter's brown hair. You were such a beautiful baby. She searches Rebecca's eyes. Where's Roger? He should be here by now. Merry Christmas, Elizabeth. Green one, I'm afraid, but beautiful. The woman speaking wears a red hat with a white pom-pom. Good to see you getting around on your own. You're waiting for your daughter, aren't you? She just called. She'll be here soon. The woman walks away. Elizabeth's feet move on the tile. She presses all the black buttons and keeps her eyes on the steel doors. They open. A teenage girl is inside. Her jeans are ripped at the knee. Some young people just don't have any style sense. Elizabeth rolls into the small space beside her. Merry Christmas, main floor? The girl asks. Yes, please. The teen presses the black button at the bottom. Clever girl. The floor vibrates. A bell sounds. Waiting for someone? The girl asks. My husband. I'm visiting my granny. Good thing you're wearing a heavy sweater. It's drafty in the foyer. The girl holds the elevator door open as Elizabeth maneuvers out of the compartment. She stops short of the closed glass doors. Two laughing women carrying parcels come in through the wide entrance. My chance. Elizabeth moves her feet slowly at first, then gathers speed. Outside, the sun on her face feels clean. She turns onto the sidewalk and heads towards the traffic lights. I need to get home. Roger will be worried. Just ahead, the curb lowers. The chair bumps over some rough pavement. She is in the street. Her hands are cold. So many shiny cars. Someone can drive me. Dorothy might be there.
That was Allison Colvin reading her story, The Party. This concludes Life Rattle number 1375. May today bring happiness and love to all mothers and their children. My name is Lori Callis. I had the pleasure of recording Allison reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arne Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next time for more new stories.